From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Town elections were held yesterday because, nor'easter or not, it's town meeting season in New Hampshire. It's a venerable tradition here in the Granite State, often lauded as the purest form of democracy. But how democratic is it when only 5 or 10% of residents turn out to discuss the issues, when certain groups seem to control the agenda, or when there's a storm and many people are stuck at home? In response to some of these concerns, some towns, especially in southern New Hampshire, have in recent years switched to another format called SB2, where voters aren't required to invest as much time deliberating. But traditionalists say there's a trade-off for that convenience, less understanding of the issues, and less human connection with fellow town residents. Today in the Exchange, do you attend your town meeting? Why or why not? If your town uses the SB2 format, what pros and cons do you see? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have four town moderators with us for the hour. Keith Young joins us from Northumberland, village of Groveton, where he's been town moderator for 8 years. That area holds traditional town meeting. And Keith, thank you very much. I know it was a late night for you. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Steve Taylor's also with us in studio, assistant town moderator for Plainfield, after serving 31 years as moderator. And Steve also served for 25 years as the state's commissioner of agriculture. Plainfield, by the way, conducts a traditional town meeting. And Steve, welcome. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Also with us, Christopher Hawkins, Newmarket Towns and School moderator for the past 5 years. And Chris has served in numerous local government positions, including town council, school board, the town charter commission. Newmarket is an SB2 town. Chris, good to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Laura. Happy to be here.
Also with us, Peter Basilier, Milford town and school moderator for 10 years. And Milford was one of the first towns to adopt the SB2 form of government. And Peter, good to meet you. And thank you also for making the trip.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Well, all of you, first, I would just love an update of what happened yesterday with your town elections. Maybe you had a meeting yesterday, maybe you didn't. Given the storm, and Steve Taylor, I'll turn to you first.
Well, it snowed like the Dickens in Plainfield, and I think it's still snowing as we speak. We had voting. Our business meeting will be on Saturday. But I'd say about 10% of our voters came out. There weren't any hot contests on the ballot, so that's fine. Back on previous Saturday, we had our school district meeting. It went on about 3.5 or 4 hours, but everything passed. But there was some real thoughtful discussion about our biggest problem with our school, and that's declining enrollment.
Yeah, and that's a issue we see happening around New Hampshire. And in a few minutes, Steve, we'll sort of do a town meeting civics 101 series of questions, including why these meetings are broken up and what happens between voting and deliberative session. But to you next, I think, Christopher Hawkins, what happened yesterday in Newmarket?
In Newmarket, we had heavy snow, and we worked very hard with our public works crews to keep our polling place clear and open. And we had the police giving people rides to the polls if asked for.
Most. Wow, really?
Yes, something that our police chief offers as a service, mainly to senior citizens, to give them an opportunity to come out. We had about 9%. We had about 694 people turn out, which is about 100 to 150 behind what we would normally expect. Nothing particularly controversial on the ballot this year. So a little bit lower than we would normally expect, primarily on account of the weather, and I believe because there's nothing particularly special on the warrant this year.
Yeah. So you guys, given that you're SB2, you voted yesterday. When were your deliberative sessions where you actually hash out the issues?
Deliberative sessions were about a month ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Or so, if I remember right, mid-February. Our deliberative session for the town lasted no more than 20 minutes, and for the school, probably around no more than a half hour. And they have typically been increasingly poorly attended, and there's very little substantive discussion that goes on. Particularly this year, the only things on the warrant were the operating budget, and then we had a police contract, and that's it.
All right. Well, a little bit later, we'll have to talk a little bit more about that because that's really interesting. And Peter Basilier, how about you? What happened yesterday?
Well, we had actually a much better turnout than I expected, Laura.
In Milford.
In Milford, thank you. We ended up with 1,919 voters. We actually registered 79 new voters yesterday. And we were open from 6 to 8. the attendance, the voters that came in until noontime, strong, very strong, and then it went off the cliff. And we went from having about 200 on average every hour to 70 and 80 hour per hour up until 8 o'clock last night. But the voters came out with numbers that were just slightly better than last year when I had postponed the meeting to Saturday, and we had just over 1,800 voters that showed up on that day.
So civically engaged there in Milford, with polls open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m.
That's right. Yeah, it's a long day, a very long day. We gather for breakfast at 5. We open go to the middle school at 5:30. We open the polls at 6, and I was home at 10 last night after we put the ballots in the town hall.
Oh, my gosh. And here you are with us this morning, and I know you had a little bit of a trip here. So really appreciate it. And Keith Young, last but not least, how about you? What happened in Northumberland Village of Groveton?
We had a better turnout than expected as well. There was a couple of races, but really it was pretty much just selectmen. But we had about 20% turnout, but the weather was better than we thought. And that had been, I think we had 241. Of course, we're a pretty small town, so. But everything went pretty good. We actually had the selectmen went down to a 3-vote difference, and we called them that night, and the guy wanted a recount. We were already right there, so we opened them all back up and did the recount while everyone's there instead of trying to get back together. So, interesting night anyway.
Well, and again, a late night for you, so we really appreciate it, and so much for the idea that, you know, my vote doesn't count, right? I mean, 3 votes. So you all are going to have to clarify a couple things for me. I live in a city. I do not attend town meetings, so there's a lot of stuff that I think a lot of people just don't understand. Either they don't live in a town that a city, so that you don't have town meeting, or they don't attend, so they don't know how it works. And Steve, to you first. So who has town meeting and who doesn't, first of all?
Well, about 160 towns still hang on to the traditional town meeting, where all the voters who are on the checklist are eligible to be part of the town meeting and to be able to participate in the discussion, the debate, and then vote right there on the spot. And so it's a one-and-done kind of situation. There's what's called a warrant, and it warns people to come at a specific time and place, sit down, and go through an agenda that's been prepared by the Board of Selectmen. And they hear all sides, and then there's a vote. And that's the end of it, right there. You move on to the next item on the agenda. And this system has its roots way back in the 1600s. This is the way little villages, little settlements governed themselves. It has a close affinity to what's now the Congregational Church model, where local residents, local members of a parish decide the fate of issues on the spot, right there.
So 160 towns in New Hampshire have traditional town meeting.
Right, and it's about a third of the population of New Hampshire.
Okay, yep. So, and the cities, you know, Concord, Berlin, Keene, they don't have town meeting. They've mm-hmm. got, you know, selectmen or city councils right. and so forth. So you said traditional town meeting, you come, you debate the issues, whether it's the budget or the renaming of the schoolhouse or whatever, and you vote right there. It's a one and done.
Correct.
But is that what happened in Plainfield yesterday? Did you have a
no,
meeting
just,
or just voting?
We just voted yesterday.
For officers.
Correct. And then Saturday we'll get together at 10 o'clock in the morning and we'll plow through the agenda. On the previous Saturday, last Saturday, the school district had its meeting, very similar format, or exactly the same. And we tackled the issues of funding the school and setting aside capital reserve funds for specific purposes and that kind of thing. But again... We decided when we went home that evening, business of the school district is settled for the year.
So if I want to be a civically engaged voter in Plainfield, I need to set aside Saturday for school meeting. Sounds like pretty big time commitment. And then Tuesday for voting for selectmen or whatever. And then the following Saturday for town meeting, you know, budgets and so forth outside. That's a big commitment.
Yes, it is. And that's really what sort of brought us to SB2. My colleagues will explain how that functions. And it's sort of a hybrid between city government and the old traditional town meeting form. But that, as you say, it is a conclusive kind of a thing that a lot of people like to hang on to. They are very defensive about it. I happen to be one of those.
Anyway. Well, and you're allowed. Absolutely. I'm remembering when my kids were little, especially, though, I don't think I could have devoted that amount of time, Steve, to being civically engaged in Plainfield.
Well, you're right. That has been a complaint, and we hear it in Plainfield. But we've tried to take steps to make the meeting move along as rapidly as possible. We have a vote on anything involving money. We have a recorded number, numeric vote. And now we can have people sit in their seats. We gather the little tear-off ballots, count them in less than 6 or 7 minutes, and we move right along. During that interlude, while the people are counting the ballots, we always make certain that maybe the seventh grade chorus comes in and sings us a couple songs.
Just keep people entertained.
That's right. Somebody gets up and pitches the wild game dinner that's going to come up, all of these things, to keep it moving and keep people, the people focused.
And I'm starting to realize now that there's a reason that this is also Girl Scout cookie season.
Oh,
town meeting
gosh,
season,
yes.
Girl Scout cookie season.
Oh, yes.
No coincidence there. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us just with your basic questions about how this form of government works. Traditional town meeting, as Steve Taylor explained, and the SB2 format that we'll hear about in just a moment. So your questions are welcome, of course, and your comments and personal experiences with local town governance here in the Granite State. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We've got four town moderators with us today. Keith Young, he is the town moderator for Northumberland, Village of Groveton. Steve Taylor, assistant town moderator in Plainfield. Christopher Hawkins, Newmarket town and school moderator. And Peter Basilier, Milford town and school moderator. And to our SB2 guests, Christopher, you first, please. So how does it work in Newmarket? Because it sounds like from what Steve said, it's pretty different.
Yeah, we're an SB2 town, which means we have a deliberative session where the warrant is adopted by the town council. We have a town council form of government as opposed to selectmen. We have a 7-member governing body of the town, and the school district is separate. There's a separate school board. So the school board and the town council adopt their respective warrants.
Go ahead. Tell us what that is.
It's the kind of legal expression of what it is you want to accomplish. So your operating budget and the language of the warrant will be dictated by statute and reviewed by Department of Revenue Administration. And it basically doesn't change very much from year to year. And it says this is how much we propose to expend to operate the district for the coming year. This is the anticipated tax rate impact. And this is what will happen if the budget is rejected. You'll default to the previous year's budget. And then whatever else you want to accomplish, if there's, say, a bond, we had a bond last year for school construction, that will be on there. If there's a contract, like a union contract that needs to be approved, that will be on the warrant. Contributions to capital improvement accounts, things like that, would typically go on the warrant. That gets presented to the deliberative session, and it gets debated in a similar fashion to what would happen in a traditional town meeting.
So on a Saturday, so people can come?
On a Saturday, so people can come. We arrange for childcare for people. We typically do it depending on the volume of people we anticipate, either in the high school gymnasium or in the basement of town hall. My experience has been when the voters are unhappy about something, they will turn out in large numbers and they will let you know. And if they're generally content, then they turn out in smaller numbers and they have very little comment to say. So I like to think that the numbers don't indicate a lack of interest. I like to think that it indicates that they're generally happy with the way things are going, not that they're not engaged. And the way the town council form of government works, we have many, many other ways for people to be engaged rather than just showing up once a year and participating in town meeting, as I'm sure every town does. The town council operates through a series of committees to address specific issues. Years ago, I chaired the Recreation Master Planning Committee. So the council set up this separate committee to go and address, focus on that issue, and come back and report. So it operates in a more – we get more voices involved, I think. And then the council kind of sits in more or less an executive policymaking function on top of committees that address specific issues. And that's how we go about trying to foster engagement.
How do you think the switch has worked for your town, Chris and Peter? I'd like to hear from you too on this, going from traditional town meeting to SB2.
I think it's a trade-off, and I think you mentioned that earlier. I believe in the time I've been in town since 1995 that the town has made a lot of very important progress in basic infrastructure and economic development. And I like to think that that has a lot to do with getting a lot of different people engaged in the process and increasingly over the years, I believe we've professionalized our town administration functions. They've become better and stronger. We get outstanding contributions from our town employees in that respect. So I think the town has progressed in the point of being better, more professionally managed with a lot of different voices engaged in it. But the trade-off is you go to deliberative session and it lasts 20 minutes and people don't have a lot to say. And so you wonder, are people really engaged or not? So I think it's a trade-off.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Peter, I'd love the thoughts from you, too, about this, the difference between these two and the trade-offs involved.
The major difference is that, as Keith Steve was saying earlier, is that we have gone from a place where every voter that was on the list could come and talk and debate, and it would be a lively debate. I was back in the day, I was on the school board, and before that, the school budget committee, and one party would make a proposal, the other party would respond, and we'd open it up to discussion. And you could honestly see people changing their minds as they listened to the debate and they understood more about the details of the respective proposals. Whereas today, we with an SB2 town where we have and we have two forms of SB2, one for the town and one for the school government. In the deliberative session, we go through the warrant just as a town meeting does. But instead of having several hundred people come to the high school gym and discuss and debate and decide, now we have – this year we had 170 people, the other 67. And you have to also remember that that includes the town officials that are registered voters in those numbers and people who may be town employees or school district employees who are also residents and, of course, entitled to speak. So the people who do not have an active role in the town is a small portion of the small number of people who actually come to the deliberative sessions.
So those who have sort of a dog in the fight are more likely to show up.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm surprised, frankly, Laura, that we haven't seen a major event happen along those lines at one of our deliberative sessions because so few people can go and change a warrant article. And in this case of a school meeting, it only is a two-hour meeting.
Oh, I see. Okay, Chris, real quick to you, and then I want to get Keith Young in as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that our preference would be to have every single registered voter turn out for every meeting, but that just doesn't happen. I mean, we'd like to, because then you'd know exactly how well or how poorly you're doing because people are there to tell you directly. And we wish that would happen. It just hasn't worked out that way.
No, it's really unfortunate, really unfortunate. We have more debate on social media than we do in the meetings itself.
Very interesting. And I actually have an email here from someone who says, from Louis, who says, what sorts of progressive steps, if any, are being taken to utilize technology such as live streaming or social media to engage more town members who can't physically be at the meeting? And Keith Young, I'll throw that to you first. It's an interesting question.
Well, as far as technology goes, we haven't done anything to, I guess, bridge that gap. And I'm not really sure there's a way to do that. You know, you could possibly, you know, live stream the whole meeting, but there without, you know, checking to make sure the person on the other side is a registered voter of the town, and I think that'd be a pretty hard nut to crack, especially in our format where it's town meeting, it's, you know, people have their say, and then we vote. You know, we don't do tickets. We just hand everybody a card, or they stand up. and that's how things pass. And I think in our case, it works about as well as it can.
You sound, Keith, pretty happy with the way things are working there. It sounds like people are still pretty engaged, and yeah. The traditional town meeting's working. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we've really got a lot. We have a, you know, traditionally we have a really good turnout every year for both the school and the town. Our school meetings usually aren't that long, and we do them back to back. I do them at Saturday at 9 o'clock. I'll do the school meeting, and then we have the town meeting at 10. And I think last year the school ran over by an hour and a half, so the town didn't start until it was over, obviously. But in any time anything gets real sensitive or someone's afraid of emotional stuff, we do a secret ballot so people don't feel like they are hurting everyone's feelings by voting one way or the other. And then we just send everybody, you know, everyone lines up and votes yes or no and into the box, and then that issue's over.
Steve, I love your thoughts there too, yeah. Sorry, Keith. Go ahead, Steve.
I'll send over to Steve.
Well, I think in Plainfield that let's say we have 300 people show up for the actual town meeting out of 1,500 and some odd. I think the vast majority of the people who aren't there are trusting of those people who go and speak and deliberate and cast votes trust them to make the right decision on their behalf. There'll always be a few who say, I don't like what the town did, but they didn't bother to go to the meeting. They shrug their shoulders and move on. But an awful lot of people say, you know, I should go to town meeting, but I don't. I'd rather go snowmobiling, or there's a good matinee at the theater in Hanover or something. And that's what they choose to do. And they think, I know my neighbors over across the street. They're going to go. They really study this stuff. And whatever they decide, I'm on board.
Well, it gets to what Chris talked about earlier, that satisfaction. When people don't show up, maybe it means they're disengaged, but maybe it just means that they're satisfied. So we will take a lot more questions and comments after a short break. And Louis, thank you for that email. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477.
Everyone could do with a bit of Irish luck now and again, which is why you should support NHPR today. When you do, you'll get not one, but two chances to win a trip to Dublin, Ireland, courtesy of Milne Travel American Express. That's two chances to see the brilliant Cliffs of Moher, stroll through St. Stephen's Green, or drink in some knowledge at the Old Jameson Distillery. The lucky winner will be picked on St. Paddy's Day, but you can increase your odds now with your gift today at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, four town moderators on the tradition of town meeting and how it's carried out today. Let's hear from you. Did you vote in town elections yesterday? Do you typically attend your community's deliberative sessions? Why or why not? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our moderators are Keith Young. He's in Northumberland, village of Groveton. He's held the position of moderator for 8 years. That community holds a traditional town meeting. Steve Taylor's also here, assistant town moderator in Plainfield. He served for 3 decades as moderator. Also, he served for 25 years as the state's Commissioner of Agriculture. Plainfield also conducts a traditional town meeting. And then we have two moderators from SB2 towns. Peter Basilier, he's from Milford, where he's been the town and school moderator for 10 years. And Christopher Hawkins, he's Newmarket's town and school moderator for the past 5 years. One more time, the email address for you to join us with your questions and comments, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Peter, just a moment ago, I threw an email from Louis to Steve and Keith, and I'd like to get your thoughts too. Louis asks again, what sorts of steps are being taken to utilize technology, live streaming, social media, to engage more town members who can't physically be at the meeting? I think it's a great question. I wonder what you do in Milford.
In Milford, we broadcast both the town and the school deliberative sessions, so that they can be watched live. It's not an interactive stream; it's all one way. So
you can't vote from your living room
because we haven't checked you in, and if you haven't checked in, we don't know that you're a resident who's entitled to vote. And so the streaming is one way. However, there is lively debate in social media. Up to, and I'm sure even during some of the events, and no doubt yesterday, there was a lot of social media conversation about whether we should be even holding the elections yesterday because of the storm. But I think it would be very difficult to have it a two-way input because, again, we have to be assured this because this is a town event. We want to make it positive that the only people that are contributing are residents of the town or people like some of our officials who live outside of town, which the body has approved to speak to the voters.
Another question about technology, slightly different for you, Chris, please. What about recording devices? You know, everybody's got a recording device and a camera on their cell phone. If I stood up in Newmarket and started giving a passionate speech, could somebody else hold up their phone and record me making that passionate speech?
Yes. In a word, yes.
Because it's a public forum. I say is public.
Whatever you say is public. And if you're a public official going about your business, then you can be recorded doing that, is my understanding of the way the law works.
But if I'm just Joe or Jane Citizen and I get up and make a speech, somebody else in the audience can record me while I'm talking.
Yeah, in Newmarket, all of our public meetings, from the ZBA to the council, the school board, our deliberative session, they're all televised live to the extent that that's possible. And if they're not in a room with a live television camera, then they are recorded for later broadcast.
Okay.
And I'm always surprised to hear that people actually watch.
Why are you surprised?
There is one caveat to that, Laura, and that is for people who have a religious objection to having their images captured. Right. We have not encountered that, but we will make every effort to honor that restriction. But it is, as Chris is saying, a public meeting, and what is being said by that individual is a matter of public record.
Well, another email's come in. John says, the biggest problem with SB2 is lack of oversight of default budgets. John says, no real check, and in my honest opinion, the board and administrators often overinflate so the budgets continue to rise, and voters at the polls end up with no real choice. John says, that said, SB2 still lets more people participate. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure what he means by there's no check on the default budget. Our operating budgets have remained relatively stable over the past several years.
Going up year to year.
I don't want to say not going up at all. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down depending on the assessment. But there's a lot of reasons for that. We have a capital improvement program, which is another whole topic perhaps for discussion, where capital expenditures are now built into the budget. And they're allocated to accounts that are defined under statute as a defined capital improvement program with its own separate oversight committee. So we have, through that program, we have basically eliminated spikes in our tax rate to address special projects beyond bonding for schools and things, facilities like that.
Yeah. In Milford, we have, I think what the caller was getting to, we had a situation yesterday where if you voted in favor of the school budget, you voted for a $40 million plus budget. But if you voted against that school operating budget, the default number was actually a few thousand dollars higher than the budget if you had voted in favor of it. Mm-hmm. And I think many people have the perspective that they think a default budget should automatically be less than the budget being proposed by the board.
Oh, that is a little tricky.
It is. And I believe there are some initiatives underway in Concord at the State House to address that because the boards have very strict requirements for how they calculate a default budget that's governed by advice from the Department of Revenue Administration. But what happens is if you have a board who was aggressive in paring back costs in the current year, they actually could have resulted in a budget that is less than the default from the year before because of the work that they were doing to reduce and control costs.
Well, John, thank you for the question. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So all of you, besides fluctuations in participation, what are some of the biggest changes you've seen at town meeting in the years that you've been involved? And Keith, I want to go to you first. Is it people seem better informed about the issues or less well informed? Have people's attitudes changed? Have people's manners changed? I mean, what's changed in the years that you've been involved with this, Keith?
Our town, not to sound too corny, but
go ahead, it's fine.
Most of us, you know, we pretty much get along, and when we go to the town meeting, everyone is pretty respectful to everybody. We even have one guy in our town that it doesn't matter what the warrant article is, he is going to ask a question. It could be the simplest thing, it could be anything, but every single warrant article, he asks a question. And, you know, eventually, near the end of the meeting, it almost gets comical. But it's, everyone's very patient. Everyone realizes, you know, this is their rights, and they let everybody have their say. And, you know, we move it to a vote. And it really, I think it actually helps bring the town together, even if some people disagree. It's not Republican, Democrat in town politics. In small town politics, it's, you know, is this a good thing for all of us or not? We're here now together as a group. Let's make a decision.
So. Well, that's really encouraging, actually. And Steve, I want to hear from you, too. You know, in national politics, there's so much talk about a general lack of civility, a general lack of really caring what somebody with a different viewpoint might feel. Has that spread down to your town meeting in Plainfield?
Fortunately, no. I think the greatest change that's occurred in my lifetime, and I began going to Plainfield town meeting with my folks when I was about 10 years old. I think I've made every one except the time I was in the Army. But the thing that strikes me most about that is this, that the great town meeting orators have gone away. I remember in my childhood and the early years of my adulthood, we had people in Plainfield. They were typically people who worked with their hands. They were farmers or woodsmen, but they had no fear of standing. They weren't educated. They didn't have degrees, but they would stand and speak from the heart about a particular issue. It might be a really minor thing, like what do we do with the dogs that the dog catcher rounds up? But they spoke in a way that would change people's views, and then they sat down. Those people kind of gone away. Today, an awful lot of people treat the town meeting more like a press conference where they hurl questions at the selectmen or at the school board. Often the questions are kind of tendentious. But
like what?
Isn't it true that you spent $80,000 on Freeman Road while Daniels Road was rotting down? Don't you think it should have been diverted over to Daniels Road? Well, okay, legitimate question, but the selectmen have got to come up with an answer. They're not prepared for that. They don't know this is coming, so they got to be able to think quickly on their feet. But in the old days, one of those great orators would have stood up and framed the thing for them. And, of course, the thing I probably miss the most is the great thick rural accents that these guys spoke in.
So what do you think is behind that shift? Because that's actually kind of a remarkable story.
Well, it's rising education, and people have prepared themselves. They are there, have prepared themselves. They've read the town report. They've read the budget numbers. Just about everybody knows the selectmen. They know the school board. They essentially trust them. But they have decided to trust and let somebody else's judgment prevail because they trust these people's goodwill.
How about you guys? Why don't you go first, Peter? What changes have you noticed, if any, over the years that you've been involved in this, either how people feel about it or how they behave or the questions they ask?
I haven't noticed a change in terms of the civility. It's still there. And I think that's one of the roles a moderator has to play in the meeting, is to assure that all the sides that wish to speak are able to do so. And I think part of that is the formality of a town meeting and how we actually run the meeting, and the authority that the moderator has in doing that. But I do think it, with deliberative session, we don't have the debate that we had before. It's more focused on the warrant article. The school board or the select board will make their recommendation. The budget committee will come up with theirs. And then we'll have a few people that ask questions about it, but not necessarily trying to make a strong persuasive argument. We'll have a few, don't get me wrong. I mean, people who are opposed to a $40 million plus school operating budget will take the floor and command it for a while to ask questions. But because we only have 60 or 70 people out of over 11,000 who could show up, they're not affecting a change.
How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I've been giving a lot of thought to what I've heard here this morning and trying to put it in the context of what I see. Steve makes an excellent point. So much of the discussion is focused on the specific details of things now, and it's rare that we have what I call an historian, somebody who's got a sharp historical grasp of the way the town has developed over several decades, who can put a question into that kind of a context of the development of the town. And Steve is nodding his head at me, so I know I'm on the right track. The historians are people who have a long-term grasp of the way the town has developed. We say in Newmarket that there are no new discussions. There are only old discussions that are recycled as new people come to discover, hey, our school really needs to be improved. Well, we've had this discussion 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. So it's important to have that perspective. When somebody does speak from the heart with a larger perspective, it makes a big impact on the meeting.
Well, coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about some of the issues that came up in your towns this year, whether it's schools or Keno or so and so forth. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Go ahead, Steve Taylor.
We have to put in here how important the moderator is. These things don't function without a good moderator. And I was in the newspaper business for years and years, and I covered a lot of town meetings. And if the moderator was floundering or didn't know how to maintain the pace, the order of the meeting, things fell apart. And that's when you begin to see incivility. And a good moderator is worth everything. And the moderator is about the only office we elect where you don't run on an platform. You don't have to advocate for or against.
In fact, you're not supposed to, right?
You need to have integrity, and you need to have confidence to stand up and hold things together.
Keith Young, you've been town moderator in Northumberland Village of Groveton for 8 years. You're a relatively young guy. What was it like that first year to sort of get up and do this thing? Because as our other guests have said, you've got to be good at it or things get out of control.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I kind of got thrown into the fire, actually.
Uh-oh.
Just prior to the town meeting, the prior moderator, who before that was, I think he was the chief, or yeah, I don't know exactly what he was, but he actually moved out of town. So he was no longer a resident, so he could no longer be moderator. So with about 2 weeks' notice, it wasn't much time. They needed to find somebody pretty quick, because it just kind of dawned on them that he moved, and all of a sudden they needed somebody to run the meeting. So I volunteered, thinking it was kind of, I was thinking it was going to be, you know, maybe a one-time thing, but I should have known that it was, you know, if it went well, it was going to be a lifetime position.
You must have done a decent job. What was it like that first day to just get up there in front of your fellow residents and say, okay, I'm in charge here, I think?
Well, you know, I've lived there all my life. Everybody knew me, and everybody kind of knew I was getting thrown into it. But on the flip side, nobody else wanted to do it. So they were very thankful, and everyone was very, very understanding that I was new. But again, you know, we have a pretty caring community. So there wasn't anything that was too too emotional that anything really got out of hand. So.
Or too terrifying. Christopher Hawkins, how about you? Your thoughts on so the role of the moderator and what you try to do with that?
Oh, I think it's Steve's exactly on the money. For me, I look at it as kind of the way that I approach trying to coach youth sports, which is if you are calm, they will be calm. If you are organized, they will perceive that you are organized and together, and they will give you an easier time. If you come in and you're flustered and you're disorganized and you're not sure what's going on, they can sense that, and it makes them uncomfortable, and it makes for a more difficult meeting. So I try to sit down in advance of the deliberative session with the school board and the town council and say, what are we doing? Who's moving these motions? Who's doing the explaining? Let's walk through this so that I'm never uncertain about who is addressing what issue. And it just creates the perception that the people responsible, which is the moderator and the council and the school board, have their act together, and the people can express their views on the merits of the motion and not have to worry about mechanics of things, because it's all very relaxed and very easy and organized.
Well, and Peter, is the role of a moderator different in an SB2 town than a traditional town meeting town, or is that still pretty much the same?
It's still pretty much the same. It's about managing the process of the meeting. Unfortunately, now, though, instead of saying that the vote has been decided and this is what we're going to do, I move that the item be put on the warrant so that the voters – or actually on the ballot so that the voters can vote on it at the election. So the closing of that is altogether different. It's the same effect, you know, in a sense, but we're not actually deciding something. We're putting it onto the ballot, and that's – it's a funny way to have to – close the discussion of a topic of over $40 million operating budget or a $3.5 million fire station upgrade, that type of thing.
So it's not a one and done, like Steve Taylor said. Basically, you are deciding to put it on the warrant so that the voters can look at it.
Well, it's later. on the ballot, literally, because the warrant is what warns the voters that there's
That's
a meeting.
Right.
And then we are now moving those articles from the warrant onto the ballot.
All right. And coming up, I do want to ask everybody what some of the big items were on the agenda or are on the agenda in your town. Got a couple emails too that are coming in, so I'll share those with you. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's town meeting season, and we're talking with four town moderators about how this tradition occurs in their communities. Let's hear from you, too. Do you attend your town meeting? Why or why not? And if your town uses the SB2 format, what pros and cons do you see with that? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our four moderators are Keith Young with Northumberland Village of Groveton, Steve Taylor with Plainfield, Christopher Hawkins with Newmarket, and Peter Basilier with Milford. One more time, that email address is exchange@nhpr.org. So, gentlemen, we've talked a lot about how town meeting or SB2 rolls out in your town. We've heard some stories about how things have changed or not changed. Keith, to you first, what were maybe the two biggest issues before your town this year? Was it Keno? Was it housing? Was it the opioid crisis? What are people really talking about?
With most places, the biggest thing is generally always the school budget, because it's the largest item. It's the one that they see as the most impactful. Everyone is always going to have questions about the school budget. The other one actually is we have a thing about changing the hours of our polling time when the voting is going to be open, and that is always a very sensitive subject. And I think some people misunderstand that as trying to limit access to the polling place, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's just trying to be reasonable. You know, right now we do 9 to 7, but in that section of 9 to 7, you know, we have 240 some odd people show up. So it's spread pretty thin throughout the day.
So that's an issue in your town, just how long you're going to hold the balloting.
Right.
Yeah. How about you, Steve Taylor? What were some of the big issues in your town?
Coming up on Saturday, there are two things. One is to merge the two volunteer fire departments into a single municipally controlled department. These two fire departments have existed for more than a half a century, and they're basically private clubs. And in recent years, the town has given each a little stipend, but they've had their own chief, their own buildings, their own equipment and all of that, and they raised most of their money themselves. But the way insurance laws are now and worker comp and all those kinds of things, it's a bigger thing than a small private organization can handle. So we're going to try to merge those. The town will take them over, and the selectmen will appoint the fire chief. So that's that. The other thing is sort of similar. Plainfield is a bizarre town in that we've always had two villages, and until modern times, they were separated by mud. I mean, muddy roads, such that if town meeting was being held in one of the villages, you had to go to Claremont or Lebanon to get there. You couldn't go through Plainfield to get to the other village. So it rose up. We had two post offices, two phone exchanges, two fire departments,
wait,
two
in
ranges,
that teeny little town,
and on
two
and on,
post
all
offices?
All of this crazy stuff. And we finally built a central school and paved the road, and that helped a lot. But we have two libraries. We fixed up one about 20 years ago, and that's lovely. But now the other library is saying, hey, we want to upgrade. We're not ADA compliant and so on. So some people say, geez, we already got one fancy library. Why do we need two? Others say, it's an important piece of the community. We've got to have it. So
how many
we'll
people
fight
in
that
Plainfield,
out.
Steve?
How many people in Plainfield? 1,580 on the checklist, about 2,800 population. We still have a lot of agriculture, but we're a bedroom town for Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center and Dartmouth College.
So a small town, two libraries, two volunteer fire departments because of that muddy road.
Yeah.
And so now at town meeting, the whole issue is, do we merge? Which one do we beef up?
Exactly.
That's really interesting. How about you, Peter? What were sort of the two hottest
I think Steve's a great salesperson. I want to move up there.
Careful now.
Yeah, really. On the town side, the major item was the upgrade to the fire station, $3.5 million upgrade, and because it's a bond issue, it requires a 60% approval. So yesterday in the storm that blizzard all day long, firefighters were out there, you know, campaigning for it, and fortunately we passed it. It was a 68% number, so it was very overwhelming support in the community for upgrading the fire station, which doesn't have sprinklers in it actually.
Your fire station doesn't have sprinklers?
Okay, it was built in 75 or 77, and it doesn't have fire sprinklers.
I mean, I guess they could always use the hoses, but still.
Well, yeah, exactly. Maybe that was the thinking. I mean, yeah. We are Yankees after all, but that's another
story. Save a little money.
But on the school side, the big one was full-day kindergarten and whether Milford should move from a half-day to a full-day kindergarten.
Did you guys consider Keno also?
We also considered Keno.
Did it pass?
It passed, but there was like no debate, no discussion. Even at the deliberative session, there was none. Of all the – in Milford yesterday – all but one of the articles between the school and the town passed. The one that was probably the closest actually was kindergarten, where it was like 970 to 920 or something like that.
And how many people in Milford?
There's about 15,000 people and over 11,000 registered voters.
Okay. And how about you, Chris? What were some of the top issues before your town?
We didn't have anything special, especially controversial on the warrant this year. Last year, we had our school bond. That was a culmination of a 12 to 15-year process it took to get that done. And then construction, if it stops snowing, we'll break ground on that in the next month, 30 to 45 days, which is sure to generate some comment. An issue that we have coming up that we've been looking at for a little while is we have a dam in our downtown. The McAllen Dam that's associated with some of our old mill buildings, and there's a discussion about whether that should be removed or partially removed or how that's dealt with.
Yeah, that's an issue because people are concerned about old dams and safety, and if it breaks, you know,
Yeah,
people could get hurt.
We don't have a problem with downstream threat to people's safety. It's just the dam doesn't serve any purpose. It's not a flood control. It's an old hydroelectric for a long defunct hydroelectric plant, and it's just how would removing it affect the Lamprey River? And that's not an immediate issue of concern. Things like, I have a lot of sympathy for Steve, though. Merging two volunteer fire departments is a large task, and there's no such thing as a small issue just because you're in a smaller town.
Very well
so
put.
No, we have nothing. Yeah. We have nothing at that level of what I'm sure is a lot of discussion in Plainfield.
And have you guys looked at Keno in Newmarket?
Yeah, Keno passed by a very narrow margin. My experience with Keno is the same as Pete's, which is there was no real discussion of it. I don't know. There hasn't been buzz in the community that I've heard about it. It was a petitioned warrant article by a former member of our town council. It went on the warrant, and it passed by a pretty narrow margin. And I don't know what it means, and I don't know if anybody really knows what it means. Maybe no. Pete knows.
And petition warrant articles are difficult to get passed because they don't have the imprimatur of the select board or the school board, proposing it and asking for it, and then whether the budget committee goes along with that. So petition warrant articles in and of themselves are oftentimes difficult to pass.
Keith, I should have asked you as well. Is Keno even being considered where you are?
No, we didn't have any talk.
Steve, yeah. No? Not in Plainfield? Okay. Well, here's another email that came in from Mike, and he titles it The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So thank you, Mike. He says, as a transplant who has attended town meeting since arriving, I find it a very rewarding form of civic engagement. On the negative note, some of the worst civic arguments that I've heard have been made at town meeting, such as you should support budget proposals because the selectmen are good people and we shouldn't question them. Mike says, so I have to wonder if anybody in the history of town meeting has ever been swayed by an argument made on the floor. And Keith, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. We've had plenty of things. I can remember one specifically that was like a pretty emotional speech. We had a warrant, and I think it was petitioned, so this may be a little off topic, but we had a warrant for us to vote on as a town defining marriage or something like that, and someone stood up and gave a lengthy talk against us even voting one way or another on this and giving this question the time of day. So we, and then they made a motion to pass over. So we didn't even do a yes or no vote on that based on that guy's speech. And it was kind of an overwhelming thing. And it was definitely one of those nice moments that they were talking about where somebody stood up and was really heartfelt discussion. So
one of those heartfelt speakers that
yeah.
Steve Taylor mentioned
yeah.
earlier. Thank you for the email, Mike. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. How about you, Steve Taylor? Have you seen sort of transformation happen on that town meeting floor?
Well, yeah, over the years, certainly. There have been many times, very often on a relatively small issue. one time we had a petitioned article to declare some kind of a critter that was found in the bed of the Connecticut River, the town mollusk. All right. Well, I mean, some people got up and they raged that this doesn't even belong here. This is a joke, making us all look stupid and everything. And then this little gal, she stood up and with her little hat on, and she said, oh, this is an important thing. And this mollusk isn't anywhere else. It's right here in Plainfield. And everybody said, oh, what the heck? Yes. And
we voted go away.
And yeah. Pretty soon we had people wearing T-shirts that said Plainfield's mollusk.
Oh, that's
the
funny.
The picture of this thing. Some things like that. But on big stuff, yeah. Well, I think Keith just mentioned we had one a few years back about extending health care coverage to partners of the same sex. And there were a lot of people, and they lined up. And then a guy, I don't even know what his name was, he took the microphone, and he just said, I am a gay man. I would never think of discriminating against any of your children. Oh, boy. And that was it. They voted it right through.
Wow,
I mean, it was overwhelming. You know, it was so powerful. Yep.
Very interesting. Reminds me, too, that when you talk about the mollusk, Chris told us earlier, there's no small issues, even if it's a small town. So, Chris, go ahead. I can see you want to jump in, too. Times when people's minds have been swayed, changed.
Yeah, I think Steve's exactly right. The amount of money in play has nothing to do with how important people think the issue is.
It could be $50.
Correct. We had an issue 3 years ago, 2 years ago maybe. We have an agency in town that provides rides to senior citizens who can't get to doctor's appointments. And the town makes a small contribution every year in recognition of how important that service is to the community. Well, the council decided they wanted to cut that contribution. That issue alone generated more than an hour of discussion for $2,500. And what changed their minds was an elderly lady who uses the service says, I need this service. This is why it's important to me. And she just laid it out from the heart. And they added all that money back into the budget, and we move forward with it.
Okay, now I'm feeling bad. I live in a city. I can't participate in this. Yeah. So, guys, last quick question. I'll throw this to you, Steve. John says, sorry, coming late to the conversation. Why is town meeting held in March? Why not in fairer weather like April 13th? Awesome question, John, especially given what we've seen in recent years. Steve, real quick.
I think historically the assessing of property in towns occurred on the 1st of April, and it still does. That's the cutoff. That's when all property is assessed for tax purposes. And the desire was to get the town's business squared away before we had to set the tax rate.
All right. There you have it, John. Thanks, everybody, for being here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.